Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And oh my gosh, did we touch on something. On last week, we started a program. It was on last Thursday, we did a program called When Love Dies. And it was about love and when people start getting irritable with each other and about what that was all about and what happens over a period of time with people. And we talked about the kind of relationships that people have where the love is kind of the wind has gone out of the sail. I think that's a beautiful description. You know, the relationship, a good relationship is like a sailing sailboat. It's like you got wind in the sail. Two of you are going somewhere. It's wonderful. You touch each other. You feel each other. You smell each other. You like each other. And then time. Time does this thing. And time seems to, through familiarity, through whatever it is, the seven-year itch, whatever you want to call it, time seems to rob the sailboat of its billows, you know? And it usually winds up in some kind of either one or the other person feeling turned off to the relationship in some way. Not turned off completely necessarily, just not turned on. It's almost as if one person becomes the positive magnet and the other person becomes the negative magnet. It's almost like there's a vacuum on one side and there's abundance on the other. Sometimes both people lose it, you know. Sometimes it happens with both people. In some relationships that are formed on the basis of only one person motivated towards the other person. This is where it's no mutuality, but some person falls in love with another, and they search them out, and they serve them, and they take care of them. The energy's all on one side. So the other side doesn't really give any back. And so when love dies on the side of the person who is doing all of the motivating, well, then you both are dead because the other one was dead the whole time. So that's not the case I'm talking about. I'm talking about when two people have the passion, have the love, have the caring. They have it, and then something starts to go wrong. And you don't even know it's going wrong, but it goes wrong a little at a time. And then eventually it's sour. Now, what we've learned is that there is enough chemistry to indicate that it's a natural progression that after a certain number of years, love in effect dies. And that what you could do, it's just like a natural course of things. But now people are living longer. So how do they live with each other? They live with each other like two partners. They live with each other like two people living in the same house. They have a little affection. They have some smiles. They have a few laughs with each other. They're less than roommates. They're certainly not friends because there are things you don't want to tell the person you're living with because they may react to it. What's it all about? And we're trying to understand what happens when love dies. As a result of this, we got calls, more calls, I would say, than we have ever gotten before, more emails than we ever received for many years. To do with this subject, because I think it's here that people feel lost. The pain of having yourself or having the person you love fall out of love with you or not love you or feel apathetic towards you, that thing is murder. It is brutal. It is so difficult. And what we opened in the audience to people listening were some private tears that were sent to us. people were screaming, oh my gosh, thank God you touched on the subject, because I've been sitting in silence with this. Because if you go to a friend of yours and you say, I don't know what's going on, he just doesn't seem to care about me anymore. Your friend says, well, maybe he's having an affair. Well, maybe he's this, maybe he's that, maybe he's that. And the friend will give you advice in some way. You go to your parents, they give you another kind of advice. But very few people talk to the fact that there is a great difficulty here, and who knows what's at the bottom of it. Well, I think I have some information for you that will help you understand it more. First, I want to talk about resources. Resources. And that's such an interesting thing. You know, if I have a house and my house has heat, and it's the winter, and we've seen a big snowfall, and there's a light on in my house, and somebody's walking in the drift, where do you think they're going to go? If they're freezing to death, they're going to come to my door. Why? Because I have the resource. And what's the resource? Heat. Because you're freezing. People want resources. People want to get what they need. You need to get food. You need to get shelter. You need to get things. There is a desire to have your needs met. In an old book, Intimate Terrorism, The Crisis of Love in the Age of Disillusionment, the psychologist Michael Vincent Miller described marriage as kind of mocking our fondest dreams because the institution is not what we think it is. He says it's an environment of scarcity, a barbaric competition over whose needs get met. Two people trying to get a... Think about it. Think about you and the person you're with or the person you were with. Whose needs are getting met? Now, with most people, what you could do is you could say, well, I'll get some of my needs met, and you get some of your needs met. Right? So what do you need, and what do I need? You need some affection. I need some affection. I need some of this. You need some of that. I need to be this. You need to be that. And you kind of work it out. Now, you never, in a relationship... It almost never happens that one person gets all their needs met and the other person doesn't get their need met, because the other person would not be there if they weren't getting a need met. Their need may be just to be secure, to have a home. Think about the case of alcoholic people or people who are drug addicts and people who are, they call them their others, the people who enable them. Think about that. You know, you have one person who's a drug addict and they're having a really hard time, and you have the enabler. You have the person who's with them, who stays with them, who loves them through this whole thing. Does the enabler getting their needs met? Yes. They have a need there. They have a need to belong to something. They have a need to have somebody need them. You know, they have needs. So as long as your needs could get met, and you could see the other person as a source of your needs being met, you want to stay with them. You just keep the energy towards them. You keep positive energy towards them. Now, I'm talking about a very primitive system here, need meeting. Because I don't think it's a very smart idea to work on this basis, but we'll talk about it because I think most people function this way. As long as the person can meet some of your needs, you will find them attractive. But let's look at what happens when a person who you're with after a period of time shows that they can no longer meet your needs. For example, let's say the person gets distracted. Or the person gets sick, or the person gets disinterested, or the person gets too old, or the person gets immobile, or the person gets just like, damn, can't meet your needs. And you begin feeling this loss inside of you. You're like, and it's natural. Nature does this. Nature says to you, go where your needs are going to be met. And what happens when you feel that you can't get your needs met by your partner? If you shut off to your partner, you don't necessarily leave them, because there's one or two needs that may get met, like the house that you have, the children that you have. You still keep them around on some level, but they're no longer your love. They no longer have that investment from you. So when you feel your needs cannot be met, you may turn off. And I would say 99% of the people in relationship will have one person turned off to the other. It's about needs not being met. Now, do I think that's sane? No, I don't think it's sane. Do I think what you have to do is have therapy where you ask one person, well, what needs do you have and that aren't being met? And the person says, well, I have needs to do this, and then you should just have that happen? No. No. Because that would be following the biological imperative. Now, what's this all about, the biological imperative? You're going to have to listen to my background, friends, because I'm very hot about this. I mean, I'm very excited about examining this and examining this in a way that you haven't seen before. I got to start off at the beginning. The beginning is the sex drive. The beginning is, what does nature give us? Nature. Nature, who designed this beautiful planet. Nature, who gives us the ocean and the trees and everything else. Nature. Gorgeous. You love nature? Everybody loves nature, right? I love nature, you say. Well, nature is stupid. Nature is stupid because nature has built into design things to balance things. For example, typhoons, a cyclone. A cyclone is built when there's a difference in air pressure, and the cyclone comes around and whips around and destroys homes and things just to get the electrical charge in balance. It's pretty stupid. I mean, it's pretty destructive. It works. I mean, they last just a short period of time. Tidal waves. Just a short period of time meant to balance something. Nature finds its own way of balancing things. Typhoons. It has its own way of balancing things. I wish it would be a little smarter at times because it kills so many people. Forest fires. You know, forest fires, we've got to thin out the forest. You know, well, nature, me, find some way of not bringing as many baby trees into the world instead of burning down the forest and all the animals that are in it. Nature, you know, this glorious nature that we admire so much, is natural, but it's stupid. Nature knows nothing but its impulses, its instincts. Among the instincts that we have is nature. I know I'm going to get a call from Mother Nature. She's going to call, send me an email. I know this. She's going to say, what did you call me? Whoever said nature is stupid? I once had a friend, Marilyn Ferguson, who was one of the smartest women in the world. And I remember talking to her, and I was talking to her, and she said, talent is cheap. I said, what do you mean? I said, a person's got a lot of talent. She said, talent is cheap. If the person doesn't use their talent, it means nothing. Well, nature. Nature is this beautiful thing. Let's think about nature's design. Nature builds in a thing that we could call the sex drive. Now, what is the sex drive? Is the sex drive a man's testosterone driving through his body, telling him that he's got to have sex with the female that's over there who's an estrus, or not an estrus, is according to humans, right? That he's got to have sex because nature is saying you must procreate the species. You must procreate. You must have babies. So nature says, go spill your seed, and we're going to build into men the need to spill the seed. So the seed need that men have is so rampant because we can't tell you when you're going to find a partner that's right for you. So we're going to have you spill it everywhere. We're going to give you so many seeds, right? To give each time, and he has 200 million cells or 200 million, 2 million cells are ejaculated every time. Send them any way you want. If you do it in a hot tub, you may get somebody pregnant. You know, If you have sex with as many girls as you could have, or boys if you want, maybe somebody will get pregnant. The idea is spill, give the person so much seed that wherever they put it, maybe there'll be a baby. That's nature's way. Nature's design. Give that to men. Give women another selection process. Let them look for the strongest, the biggest, the best, the one with the most assets. Because if they do that, then they're going to be able to provide their offspring with better DNA, you know, with more intelligence, with a better house, and it's going to help the species get better. Well, this sounds like a good design, but, you know, I mean, why the muscle man and why the woman with the big breasts? You know, what's that idea all about? Why are men obsessed with women's bodies and how attractive they are and how they bounce and Playboy magazine and all that stuff? Because it's nature told them to do that. Nature put Playboy magazine into the mind of men. And that's why it exists. It's natural. Natural that men have this thing. Now, what is a sex drive? A sex drive is a need to procreate that goes along with it as its reward, a thing called the pleasure principle. In order for you to want to do this, we're going to give you a pleasure idea. And we're going to say you search for pleasure more than you do other things. And pleasure is so rewarding that you, the male, are going to want to spill your seed because it feels good. See, because each ejaculate feels good. And you women, we're going to get you to accept the male because it feels good. So based on a pleasure principle, we have this thing called sex, and we call it a sex drive. But what is it really? It really is a competition for resources. It really is an attempt for a male to have offspring that are better than the offspring that came before him. And it is an attempt by a female to have offspring that are better than the offspring that came before her. That whole thing called sex drive is really about gaining assets. It's like, you know, it's like Wall Street. It's like accumulating wealth. It's like the banks with their derivatives. It's greed. Okay? Let that be the way it is. Shall we be a slave to it? Shall that mean that any time I see a woman walking by who's bouncy, that I should turn my head and go, oh, I'd like to do that? Or any time she sees somebody who's a certain way, she says, oh, I'd like to do that. I say, no, we're trying to get past that. We're trying to get bigger than that. We're trying to be beyond that. What we call our sex drive is really about assets. Let me try to prove this a little further. Menopause. You go into menopause. A woman in menopause loses her primary assets, which is eggs. Right? She loses her eggs. She no longer is going to be able to have babies. She has no assets left. She loses her sex drive. It's almost natural. Now, but that doesn't mean that she loses her desire to still have babies, because women who go through menopause very often create, and you know where they focus? Grandchildren. I remember talking to a woman just recently who said to me, I have a grandchild that saved my life. Because I could feel as I went through menopause, it was like death. And then because I had no purpose to be here, then there was my grandchild. So it was like a whole way of being. And once again, nature stepping in about giving you assets. So what is this all about, and how does this relate to human relationships and what we're doing with each other? The trouble with it is, my friends, just because it's natural to go through a period of time where you are turned off to your partner, or whether it's natural for you and your partner to turn away from each other, and through whatever manifestation it is, I say, well, that's okay. That's what nature tells you to do. How are you going to fight it? How are you going to not be one of those victims? Stephanie, what's the statistic on married people? Oh, half. Here it is. I found it. Found it. Half of our first marriages in the U.S., as do two-thirds of our second marriages, and three-quarters of our third marriages, we fall in large part, will fail, because we enter the relationship with poor skills for maintaining them and highly unrealistic expectations, because we're trying to find this feeling again, you know, and the feeling isn't there. The fix for our poor performance in romantic relationship, it teaches us that we are not prepared for what happens. The chemicals that happen, the chemistry that happens, we're not prepared. Okay, so let's say you learn all about it, as many scientists do. If you look at your teenage, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. By the way, we're talking about failing relationships and why relationships fail. I'm giving you a little background when I'm talking here about the design of nature. Nature's design, you look at things and you say to your teenage kid, falls in love. and you're a 12-year-old, and he or she falls in love, and what do you say as a parent? You say to yourself, puppy love. They'll get over it. Because you know something hormonally, organically is happening to the child, and you know that mood is going to pass after a while. You know that. Just because you know it, you don't feel like you have to interfere. You don't feel you have to really talk to them about it. You don't feel like you have to really be there for them. In fact, sometimes if you understand too much, you lose contact with your children. Sometimes you got to go beyond understanding the nature of things to just say, we got to fight this. We got to fight it. Maybe we can't fight it chemically, but we got to fight it. We got to take it on. This is Armand DeMille with you. The name of the program is A Positive Mind. I believe that our natural design is a stupid design. I see people killing people everywhere. I see the climate being destroyed. I see resources going out the window, and I see people dying on distant countries. I see us doing a part of killing it. What are we doing? You know, do we question it? No, because it's all about resources. Every war is about resources. I want your resources, right? Flag. Flag is an Eddie Izzard joke, by the way. If you've ever seen Dressed to Kill with Eddie Izzard, he talked about the British and how they used to go around with flags. And wherever they find there wasn't a flag, they'd put a flag and say, now you're part of Great Britain. Flag. Okay, we go into Iraq. What can we possibly want in Iraq besides all your oil? Go into Afghanistan. What could we possibly want besides the oil fields and the heroin? What else could we possibly want? It's all about resources. North and South, you know, having their fights in the Civil War. What was it about? Resources. Right? The South believed, hey, we should have slaves as resources. And the North said, we want to take your resources away. Right? We don't want you to have them. A fight over resources. Somebody comes to you and they want something of yours, or they want to cheat you out of something. It's your resource. You fight them back. We invented lawyers. Lawyers are resource negotiators. It's another way that we do it. Well, relationships. A study of arranged marriages in which love has grown over time. Very interesting. Hints that commitment, communication, accommodation, and vulnerability are the key components of a successful relationship. And here I have to introduce Stephanie Dombra, because I have to ask her about these. Vulnerability. Stephanie, vulnerability. What's that aspect of vulnerability that we're looking for in relationships that seems to be the essence?
Well, I think one thing is that if a person feels safe with another person, they can share more of their secrets or their worries or their concerns. And if another one holds back and doesn't share that part, it doesn't level the playing field, so to speak. It makes a kind of imbalance. But if there's a shared kind of exposing that goes on, it brings people closer together. It makes them feel kind of more invested and feeling like there's a togetherness, that they understand that person is committed to them and is willing to expose and open themselves up.
So the job of the transcendent relationship person is to allow their own and their partner's vulnerability. But, you know, vulnerability could be a person feeling crying all the time and being weak and saying, oh, I'm really depressed and depressed and depressed. Is that vulnerability?
I think it's a form of it. A lot of people, and usually the kind of stereotype is a man would never come to his woman, so to speak, and say, I feel really sad. I feel really depressed. That's not supposed to be. They're supposed to be the strong, capable person. So why, you know, it's very difficult for a man probably to come to his partner and say that.
Well, for good reason.
Well, again, it may be designed that way, but a sure. woman could more easily reveal that and not be not feel as threatened that there may be something that's in an imbalance, so to speak, in the two of their...
You see, I wonder if a woman is attracted to a man because of his strength, Stephanie, and then she loves his strength, and then he becomes vulnerable, and he turns around and he says to her, let me tell you, I'm not so strong, I feel sad, I feel weak, or so on and so forth. She may have lost a resource because she wanted the strength. She may not want him to be vulnerable. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure that vulnerability works, because most of the men I know would rather be vulnerable with their best friends than with their wives. You know?
Could be.
Could be is right. Stephanie Dombra, by the way. There are a number of love-building exercises that you could do, things that you could do to kind of connect with each other. But here's the challenge I put out there. A challenge is, you want to be a monkey, be a monkey. If you want to go through life just following your instincts and saying nature, 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 you can do that. If you want to come out of the trees and be part of a growing planet that evolves, that doesn't believe in hitting children, that doesn't believe in making wars, that doesn't believe in leaving relationships just because they became uncomfortable, but one who will fight for what they believe in, who will not let a family separate just because there's disagreement in the family, who's not afraid of confronting truth. If you want to be part of the, what I call the human intelligentsia, which is not just in your mind, it's in your heart. If you want to be part of that world, then you got to learn to step up to the plate. And in order to learn to step up to the plate, you've got to challenge yourself. And challenging yourself and challenging your own instincts. It is so easy to dump somebody. It's a breeze. That's why we have so many divorces. We dump them, we move on. We dump them, we move on. We dump them, we move on. It is so simple. I have a good friend who I spoke to the other day. He told me about a man who came to him and he said he's got this relationship with somebody who's barely there. And the man I spoke to, the psychologist, said, well, why does he stay there? Why doesn't he just get rid of it? Why doesn't he just dump it? Because sometimes you, as a person who of quality, and you as a person who has really worked on it, say to yourself, I want this to work, and I'm going to be stronger than my impulse, which tells me to leave. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When we come back today, I'm going to give you a number of exercises that you could do that will help you in some way maybe bring back or maintain some of the love that you have. One of the things I could tell you for sure to make it happen is make sure that your, this is going to be hard to say because somebody told me, your scent is available to your partner. Make sure your partner can get your scent. That means if you smell dirty or you smell rotten and your partner doesn't feel like getting close to you, if your breath is bad, change that. And if your partner, if you can't smell your partner, if you're not aware of the way your partner smells, find out why. Get closer. Find out what that is. Because the nose heals many things. It can heal, it can give you messages, it can send you messages back that say to you, you're still connected. When we get back from our break, I'm going to tell you a dozen different things that we have learned and see that may help you in this quest towards a transformational relationship. And I mean transformational, because other than that, we could all be bonobos. You know, we could all be monkeys. And I don't want to talk bad about the monkeys, but you know, there's a step up. And the step up is not the monkey who goes and kills the monkey next door for the banana. It's the monkey who would say, it's the person who comes out of that and says, let me take care of myself and the people around me. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we'll continue. We take
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Well, it's that time of year once again.
Yep, the lovely sounds of Christmas.
Christmas? At my house is Kwanzaa.
Yeah, but I celebrate Hanukkah.
Well, which holiday is it?
Yeah, which holiday is it?
Ooh, I know. It's all three.
Yeah! So happy Chris-quanica! And a happy New Year!
All right, that's it. Break it up. And no more beer for any of you. I've decided for Christmas, we're all getting singing lessons. The WBAI family wishes you and your family a very happy holiday season.
Instead of me, I'm a king without a crown, and you're losing the big town. I'm the king of bongo, baby. I'm the king of bongo, bongo.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo, bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo, bongo.
Hear me when I come. Mama was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I start banging my first bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. Hit me when I come.
The human mind. What a fascinating thing, and it's not as confusing as you think. Tune into The Positive Mind Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. and learn about why we do the things we do. This is Armand DeMille, The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. It was an accident, Michael. Hi there, this is Armand DeMille with you. That was Bongo Bongo with Mano Chao. Now, here's the idea. One of the things that happen, you'll notice, between couples as they disconnect, is they stop looking at each other. They look away. You look for the eyes of your partner. You know, sometimes you say, hey, where are your eyes? And they're always looking off somewhere. It's almost as if they're afraid to look at you. If you look at them, they can't keep the focus on you. You wonder, what is that? What will happen to you if you look at me? So what you may do if you're both aware of it, is to try to see what would happen. Why are you afraid? Why do you have to turn your eyes away? Why can't you stay looking at me? Mutual gazing is one of the chemical ways of healing the soul between two people. And the fact that one person won't do it is telling you that they're scared. There's something inside them that works against it. What could go wrong? You make an agreement. We gaze. You gaze and you look at each other without anything in between, and you try not to get distracted. You just try. You try to see what is it like to be just completely with each other. Now, this could be on broken relationships and damaged relationships too. Because why would a person not be able to look at another person? What are you afraid of? What are you going to see? What's going to happen? Well, what happens through mutual gazing is the next part of it is you synchronize your breathing. So if your partner turns away, you say to them, come on back. Come on back. Let's see it. Come on back. And they'll turn away. They'll get distracted by a magazine or something. But then you just invite them back. And the next step you say is, let's try breathing together. Slow, long breath together. You don't have to be thinking anything. You're just gazing. It is an invitation to the dance. It doesn't have to heal. It doesn't have to become more intimate. You don't have to have sex after you do this. But you just say, stay with me if you have the courage. Stay with me. Keep looking at me and breathe. You know what happens to most people who can't do it? They begin to cry. Tears begin to come somewhere behind it. I'm not saying stare. I'm just saying be there. Breathe. It's healing. You know, some people I know have to work out every twice a day. They have to work out. I wonder if a couple would meet every day and sit in a room and just look at each other without looking away and just breathe together without saying any words. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know. You meet your husband, you meet your wife, you meet your boyfriend, your girlfriend, you know, but you're feeling a little estranged. Let's have some look time. I wonder what would happen. I wonder how it would change things. I've heard reports that it really is something that gets you back nearer to or closer to the person. Soul gazing. Soul gazing is standing about 2 feet apart. You look deeply into each other's eyes, trying to look into the very core of your being. That's like a 2-minute thing you do, just doing it from a distance. And there's another thing called monkey love. Standing or sitting fairly near each other, start moving your hands, arms, and legs any way you like, but in a fashion that perfectly imitates your partner. You'll both feel as if you're moving voluntarily, but your actions are also linked to those of your partner. Eventually, just the fact that you move together and you find a synchronicity begins to heal. The secret swap. Write down a deep secret and have your partner do the same. And then trade the papers and talk about what you have. And then be careful, be real careful while you're doing it, because as you read the other person's secret that they've shared with you, make sure you greet it with mindfulness and without joking. There's another exercise that's very interesting called the mind reading game. You write down a thought that you want to convey to your partner. Then you spend a few minutes wordlessly trying to broadcast that thought to him or her. And you say, okay, here's my thought I'm trying to tell you. And can you guess what I'm trying to tell you? And the person tries to guess it. See, and you just keep sending it, and you give them hints, or they ask you for hints, and they say, what is the thought? Until you try to read each other's mind. Another exercise that tunes you into each other, because here's what happens in relationships that die. You tune away from your partner. You're no longer tuned into them. Relationships that are alive are the ones where you're tuned into each other. There's a harmony to it. You know, there's a dance to it. You feel like you're two people on the same planet. You feel like you're partners. You feel like you're playing. You feel like you're living together. But once people begin to separate, and this is what happens, as they separate, they move apart, and they can't find a way back together again. Very, very difficult. Let me inside. Another exercise. Some people do this standing. And you know, and you might want to get a copy of today's program. Bring it home to your mate and say, you know, we're in this spot. Maybe we could try some of these things. Stand about 4 feet away from each other and focus on each other. Then every 10 seconds... move a bit closer, a bit closer, a bit closer, a bit closer. And then when you're in each other's personal space, which is about 18 inches, get as close as you can without touching. Just as close as you can and see how close you can get without touching. And don't most people will wind up in a kiss. as a result of it because of the intimacy of having done that. Now, here's another one that I'm interested in. Place the palm of your hand as close as you can as possible to your partner's palm without actually touching. Do it for several minutes, during which time you not only feel heat, but some also feel an eerie kind of sparks and energy between the two. You certainly can feel the air passing through. It's another contact exercise. Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. So some of the reason that people separate is over some kind of a wound. A wound happens. Something happens. You have, you've been betrayed. You discover something. You find out something. You know, there's been a betrayal. There's been a thing. I've often wondered about why it ends up, that always ends up, or the majority of time that winds up in a disaster. You know, people separate over that. Oh, you slept with somebody else. That's as natural and as primitive as you could get. It is so primitive. A man's jealousy, for example, you know, I mean, nature has built in this incredible mechanism. How does it work with male jealousy? I got to ask Stephanie, I think you know more about this. Male jealousy, Stephanie, what's the idea of it in nature?
I think it's to make sure, again, if we're talking about impregnating the woman, they really want to make sure that it's their seed that goes in. So it's kind of a term called mate guarding.
And why do you want it to be your seed that's going in?
You want to propagate your kind.
Right, like a male lion will go into, and if he picks up a female lion who's got cubs by another lion, he kills him. He eats him. Right? He kills him right away. Because you don't want to bring up male jealousy. Seems to be about not wanting to bring up babies that aren't yours. That's how primitive it is.
Right.
Otherwise, why would you care so much? Well, what's female jealousy about then? Female jealousy is about, I don't want him to go off with another female because I'm going to need him here.
As a provider.
As a provider.
Even though she picks him as well in terms of his, you know, good strength and genes and intelligence, she wants his sperm, so to speak, as well.
And she wants him to stay there, not only his sperm, she wants him to stay there mm-hmm. and guard there and be there. So what happens is we get a betrayal, and here you are again, nature. Nature is telling you, okay, he betrayed you, you better not ever look at him again. You better kick him out, you better get rid of him, nature. Right? Nature tells you if she betrayed you, if she did something and was with somebody else, don't you dare keep her around. Nature. Nature is stupid. So what? Big deal. Let's look at it. Let's see what we could learn from it. Let's get over it and let's get closer. Let's learn to get closer. See, this is the whole idea. The whole idea is transcending this biological imperative that just says to you, you know, you can't win. So, my friends, about relationships, I'm going to say to you that there is a thing. I'm going to talk about the resources, and I'm telling you, it's a competition for resources. As long as you know each other, as long as you're trying to find out, can you meet my needs, then you're interested in the other person. As soon as that person begins to reflect needs that are greater than your needs, and then they begin tapping on your resources. So, for example, let's say you're somebody who's related to somebody who's persistently sick, right? Now, then not only has he have needs, but he's tapping on your resources because you need your resources for other things. And that'll turn you off because the resource competition is so big. Having your needs met is such a big thing. I wonder if we should take a call if we have a chance today, you know, because this is, it's a continuous battle. There's just so much of this stuff. You know, one of the things that thriving couples do to accentuate the positive in their life is celebration. How much celebration do you have? How much celebration do you have between the two of you? People have celebration around party time and stuff like that. But how much celebration do you really have with each other, just over each other? Celebrating your relationship. That's what I think Christmas gifts are about, and gifts are about, and birthday gifts are about. I celebrate you. I celebrate you. It should be like the pop on the bottle of champagne. I celebrate you. I'm so happy you're alive. I am so happy that you're in my life. Such a nice thing. Like I said, it's easy to dump. It's very hard to fight through the tough spots. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. You know, another thing is the way you guys handle good news and bad news. Sometimes you think that a problem can only be greeted by a solution. If a person presents a problem to you, must you solve it? Do you have to do anything about it? Or could they just tell you how they feel? Can they say to you, this is the problem, this is what I feel? Sometimes just being able to be there for someone when they're feeling that they have a problem and they want to be able to share it with you, very, very valuable, bonds you even closer if you just say, okay, I understand you're in pain. Not saying here's how we solve it. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, how are you? I'm calling because I'm listening to what you're saying, and I think it's an ideal. But I also think that what if a relationship is, you know, you're vulnerable and you open up to your partner and then they use that against you in a way that hurts you, which you no longer trust them.
Could you give me an example of that?
Well, I had told my soon-to-be ex-husband that I was abused as a child and different things like that, which he said was, in my opinion, I believe he was verbally abusive to me and he would put me down about it and use things like that against me. And I mean, I can give you a bunch of examples, but it
was pretty... let me even take that example. Look, it doesn't matter what. I mean, what if you said I grew up and I was afraid of spiders? Then he could use that against you. I mean, the idea is when people do that with each other, it's just pure disrespect. Now, right. When that disrespect comes out, it should be caught at the beginning. That's at the very beginning. Not, oh, you used my private information against me, but more, you just said something not nice to me. Let's find out why you're being not nice. Let's talk about it. I would say the evolved couple would not let that get past. They would challenge it. They would say, let's look at this, honey. Come on. Why are you saying things like this to me?
Well, and I agree. I mean, we were in counseling for over a year. So my point is that I feel I was willing to do all those things, but that we should specify if in a relationship is abusive, I think sometimes, you know, fighting it out and staying is not the right choice.
Okay, let's take that example. Abusive is one of those titles we want to put on a relationship because there are people who make a living telling people using this word abusive. You mean if a relationship is one where one person is doing things that are damaging to the other person, emotionally, verbally, or something like that, you have to ask the question, why are you staying? Why do you stay more than one day?
Well,
you know what I mean? You can't be abusive for more than one day if you don't like it.
You weren't abusive until later on.
Okay, so even if it's abusive, the first day it gets abusive, you can either get out or you challenge it. You get out or you say, wait a minute, you can't talk to me that way. Wait a minute, there's something wrong here. Why are you talking to me this way? We're not going to go another week without taking care of this. What did you say?
Well, that's my point, is that's why I feel that I did leave, you know? That's why I feel I did give up on the relationship, and that's my answer to what you're saying.
Answer to you is, and maybe you didn't have the tools to take it further, which is what many of us don't have. How many of us know what to do in that situation? I know a lot of relationship between shrinks, where both people are therapists, Boy, could they be stupid. They're more stupid than nature sometimes. They have all the information. They know everything. But, you know, the highest rate, one of the highest rates of incidents of suicide is among the children of therapists.
Oh,
it's like, how smart can you be? But there is a level of it, I'm saying, that we could move to, which is investing in the love. I want us to fight for this. I believe we could win.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. I think there's another call there. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good.
First off, I want to say that I'm so grateful for your show. It's been just so enlightening over the years. I've got so much from it. And being the holidays, I think on behalf of many of the listeners, I would just want to say thank you so much.
Oh, for the holidays. How nice. I mean, you know, I was really hoping I was going to be with you on Christmas or on Kwanzaa or on any of the other days, but it just turns out our scheduling didn't allow it. Yes, yes, from my heart to all of you, too. We're all in it together. We all sit under the same celebration star. You know, thank you. Thank you so much for your kind words.
Thank you. I guess, Armand, for my issue, and again, it's just so profound what you speak about, and I feel like for me, you know, the whole show, I would need to kind of study it for a year to put it into action, because so much stuff is said, but I guess what comes up for me just, you know, hearing you speak is that for me, it feels like I'm inside in this. My wife and I, we've been together for 20 years. We've been married 9. We had the same alarm clock for 11 years previous to that. And for me, it feels like I'm behind a glass wall. I mean, I see her, I engage, but there's this part of me where I just can't fully just let go. And I love this person. I have huge admiration for her. I just really love her. And yet for me, it's just so much of the stuff that I just can't fully let myself go.
All right. Have you?
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Have you turned off to her sexually as well?
No. I have a lot of issues around sexuality. And I know that that's an issue of deprivation for her.
Mm-hmm.
For me, and it's kind of wild that, you know, that just touch, it can be very triggering for me.
Touching.
You know, it's an ongoing struggle for me. Let's put it that way.
Well, what's the struggle? What's the battle?
Well, I think just years of being violated in that way, that it's still to this day, it's still a struggle for me.
That you've been violated that way?
Yes.
And it's still a struggle for you, even with your wife.
Even with my wife, yes.
Was it always a struggle?
Yes. Yes, it was always a struggle.
Okay,
I mean, I can't say, I guess in the beginning, you know, there was the romance and the whole thing was going, was very strong. And I guess, you know, then as I kind of become more conscious, it became more difficult because it was, I'm with another human being, another live creature.
So here's the question. Here's this woman that you love.
Yes.
And you feel there's a glass wall between you and you'd like to break the glass wall.
Yes.
You would like to. You'd say to yourself, I just don't want to keep having this deadness between us.
Yes.
And I don't know how to do it. And the beginning, I'm going to say to you, start off with what I said earlier.
Yes.
You try to at least look at each other without gazing away.
Yes.
And try to synchronize your breathing. Just do that for 5 minutes together. And don't talk after it. Watch,
sure.
You'll see that the wall will start to drop if you allow yourself to do it. When people have a relationship like this, it becomes automatic. It becomes nature to continue to avoid. You avoid, you avoid, you avoid, you avoid. You don't make any effort to be close to the other person, and you got to reach out of it, you know?
Mm.
And if one person is doing all the effort, by the way, the other person keeps holding back.
Right.
It's got to be, maybe there could be an agreement. Let's make it work better. Come on.
Right.
Come on, champ. Don't give up.
Right.
Because like I said, the stupid ones, they give up. They quit.
Right. Right.
Because
I mean, I think
they're just following their natural impulse.
Yes.
They're just following the impulse, you know?
And also, Armand, just to say on behalf of those people, I have been there, that it's safe.
Absolutely.
In that, it's not like, okay, it's just because I have a low IQ, I don't get it. It's safe. You know,
absolutely.
You know, there is a payoff for staying in my own little world. You know,
absolutely.
But that no longer works for me. I don't want that anymore. That doesn't, is not, and both of us are mutually committed and enthusiastic. And
it's beautiful.
You know, it's just this, and I appreciate you talking about that tool earlier about standing 10 feet apart and gradually coming closer. And that, just hearing that was just so profound.
Beautiful. Well, you know, like I said, yes, safety is not the idea. We're trying to develop a different kind of world, and it takes some of us to challenge this thing that just comes over us, you know? My friend, thank you for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. If you want to send me an email about the subject, I'd love to receive it. It's armand@thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you soon, my friends, tomorrow with more programming.
It's 1:56 here in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. Coming up next, the Tuesday Arts Magazine Talkback with Hugh Hamilton at 3 p.m. So do keep it right where it is at 99.5 FM.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Well, it's that time of year once again.
Yep, the lovely sounds of Christmas.
Christmas? At my house is Kwanzaa.
Yeah, but I celebrate Hanukkah.
Well, which holiday is it?
Yeah, which holiday is it?
Ooh, I know. It's all three.
Yeah! So happy Chris-quanukkah! And a happy New Year!
All right, that's it. Break it up. And no more beer for any of you. I've decided for Christmas, we're all getting singing lessons. The WBAI family wishes you and your family a very happy holiday season.
Hi, this is Delphine Blue inviting you to join me every Tuesday night here on WBAI at 99.5 FM for Shocking Blue from 9 until 11 p.m. That's every Tuesday night right here on member-supported WBAI New York at 99.5 FM.
Why are you so sad? It's almost time for Christmas.
My family doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, Jewish?
Uh-uh.
Muslim?
Uh-uh.
Buddhist?
Nope. My family doesn't practice any religion, and we don't believe in things that are supernatural.
But haven't they heard? There are many ways to enjoy and celebrate Christmas that are completely naturalistic.
Really?
Really! And this Christmas, they can learn all about having a perfectly wonderful, naturalistic Christmas on Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Naturalistic Christmas Special?
That's right!
When?
From 3 to 5 on Christmas Day.
3 to 5, Christmas Day.
Right here on 99.5 WBAI.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.